Hi there, I'm Celeste Headlee. You are listening to Women Amplified's new segment, That's a Good Question. It's where we feature listeners within the CFW community and help them problem solve a real challenge that they're facing, either at work or in life, anywhere, actually. Before we dive in, though, I wanted to let you know that registration is still open for the virtual Texas, Pennsylvania, and Massachusetts conferences for women. They're happening on October 7th, November 10th, and December 2nd. We have, honestly, just an incredible lineup of speakers. They include Malala, Simone Biles, Chloe Zhao, Laverne Cox, Glenn Close, Brene Brown, Selma Blair, so many incredible speakers. Go to conferencesforwomen.org. You can see the entire speaker lineup, and you can also register there. So this episode of That's a Good Question explores a problem with two challenges. First, what to do if you're seeking growth but not interested in the company's expected career path. And second, the lack of representation for women of color in senior roles. So in addition to our listener who posed the questions, we will be joined by Loretta Fellers, the Vice President of Customer Success at Dell Technologies. Loretta will share her experiences, and she's also got some advice about advocating for yourself and overcoming some of the barriers that women and women of color face. Also, she has some pretty effective strategies that might enable growth on your own terms. So let's get started. I'm here today with one of our listeners, Damali Lawrence, who is a project architect at a global architecture firm. She's really hoping to get some advice about her career path. I'm also joined by Loretta Fellers, the Vice President of Customer Success at Dell Technologies. In addition to that role, she's also the chair of the Central Texas chapter of Dell's Women in Action and Latino Connection membership ERGs. Loretta and I are here to help Damali problem solve. Okay, so Damali, you are in a job currently that you like. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
But you want to become not a manager, but a partner. Why?
Well, it's more principal. So in larger architecture firms, you aim for principalship. And I believe that through principalship, especially with my role as a project architect, I can demonstrate not just to myself, but to other women and men that women of color can actually lead as design principals. And so specifically to my company, when you are a principal, you can achieve that through either going the project management route or the design director route. However, as a project architect, you usually don't move up to principalship unless you change going into project management or design. And I just think it's important for that representation so that other women, and specifically women of color, know that as a technical project architect or just project architect, broadly speaking, that that is something that's available. Because as of right now, especially for Black women, our numbers are 0.4% of the registered architect population. And you just don't hear about us, see us. There was an article a few years ago, like, where are the women, like broadly women architects? We've always been here. It's just, I think there's a lot of not specifically identifying what we actually do. And maybe that's a lack of clarity through the industry, but we are here, right? And we are doing the work. But I think that in terms of moving up into leadership, either it's not talked about or we just are not seeing it.
How many of the principals at your firm are women of color?
I think right now, to my understanding, we have three, but they are not necessarily project architects. One is a managing director. We have a principal. She's more management. And I forget what the last one does. But yeah, so as of now, there are three, and they're specific. And I say that's specifically Black women, but I don't have the demographic number women of color because I haven't seen it broken out that way.
When you began with this firm, you told your supervisor and your sponsor that you did not want to become a manager of a team. Why was that?
So I previously at another firm have done management, project management before. When I started at that company, I went in as a PA, and within a few months, I was moved up to project management, but I was also maintaining the PA role. I learned a lot. I think it's a valuable asset to have, but I don't think everyone needs to track on that route in order to quote unquote lead. I think that you can lead as a project architect. I don't see why you have to follow one specific route to leadership. And actually, in any firm that I've worked at, I've noticed that leadership is always considered management, but I don't know why as a project architect who works with the designers on the design and is in the field and getting the project built can't lead, because to me, that's clearly leadership, right? Like you need that role. So I just don't have a love for it. I think that sometimes we get into roles that we're told by society, like this is the way to move up. And I don't want to. it's really that simple.
So when you speak with your supervisor or your sponsor about this, what do they say?
So the sponsor that I had prior to transferring to the office that I'm in now, he was completely on board with it. And he told me that it might be challenging because it hasn't been done this way. And I understand that, right? The structure of a company is a structure of a company, but it's not impossible. Just because something hasn't been done doesn't mean that you can't do it. It just means it hasn't been done. And, you know, I had to outline like how I saw myself in a leadership role as a PA and how I wanted to move up. And I did that. And I think the next part of it is, okay, how does the company support that, right? Like, where do I go from the fact that I know I don't want to go into management, and how can they support that? And that's really the discussion right now. And I'm not sure on my end how much more I can outline based off of the outline that I already completed. Because I feel like at some point, you're just doing the work for the sake of doing it and nothing is actually getting resolved.
Loretta, do you feel like you have a good sense of what Damali's issue is? It's so often that these norms of promotion get established. And because they're the way it's always been done, that becomes self-fulfilling, right? Then it becomes the way that it is done. How does one go about breaking through norms like that?
My recommendation in listening to you, Damali, is a couple things. So I heard a couple of problem statements in what you were describing. The first one is really around breaking a norm within their company, I'm going to call it, in terms of the expected career path of an architect, a principal architect, and your ability to get to that principal role. That would be number one. The second priority that I'm hearing from you, or problem statement, is the lack of representation for women of color in the role of principal. So the two are not mutually exclusive, but yet the two can be approached in different ways, I think, but yet have overlap that could yield benefit to both of your challenges. So as an example, when I hear you speak about this norm that you're going against, there's a couple of thoughts that come to mind. I don't know if the norm is specific to your company or if it's maybe a specific problem that is also a problem in the industry. I would suggest maybe looking at the industry, and I've seen this done before, by the way, where someone wants to go change the game and they go and look at industry compares around what is normal and they bring that outside in thinking. I don't think I would be the first one to say it's easy to get stuck in our silo around the company that we're in. And we believe that that becomes the norm for everything when that's certainly not the case, right? So gathering some external industry information around what is commonly practiced in the industry may be an opportunity to provide a foundation for a different conversation with your leadership team. The second thing I would say is that my experience over 25 years in the industry and with a project management background, I actually think that leading through others without the formal title is way more difficult than having the title and the direct responsibility, because you're leading through influence, and that ability to lead through influence, I have certainly seen happen on very, very large projects that require strong coordination, strong leadership skills, the ability to challenge other people in order to drive the right outcome. So I think there's a possibility of those roles existing. I think part of the question is that the norm within the company?
What would that look like, though, Loretta, to lead like that without the title? How does she do that?
Well, the behaviors that I've seen, and I've actually been in this situation myself, actually, years ago, when I moved out of a management position to go work on our integration activities when Dell acquired EMC, as an example. And you have 160,000 employees that are now coming together. And I had a very tiny team in order to go drive massive change management for the company around the globe. And the way that I modeled the behavior that I thought was needed was, number one, you certainly have to make sure that you're connecting with the various stakeholders that are out there, and you're trying to build their confidence in your ability to not only think beyond what they care about, but think broadly around what's most important for the company, right? So your ability to pull people together with diverse backgrounds. I don't mean just in terms of what they know, but their priorities, their functional orientation, bringing them all together for the common good, and your ability to navigate across those different disciplines to bring a simplified point of view takes a tremendous amount of skill and leadership, in my opinion.
Damali, is that something that's possible for you?
So that already happens, right? Like, I think the idea of leading from behind and not necessarily with a title already happens, right? As a project architect, you are rallying all your consultants and still maybe a little less engagement with the client, but it is there. And I have done that. But I think as you tend to move up, and just like Loretta is saying, it's sometimes it's firm specific and sometimes across the industry. So usually in firms, it's like, okay, typically your manager will have the client contact, but in smaller firms, you as a project architect have the client contact and you're more embedded with them on the day to day. So the availability of me doing that is there. I think it's just a matter of A, the project, right? The scale of the project, bigger projects. Sometimes you obviously definitely need management who's more engaged. Smaller projects, you may not, right? So it depends, I think, on the scale of the project. But you know, as you get older and move up in the industry, I think it's a matter maybe for me having to find out, is there a scale limitation that I want to work within so that I can lead the way that I feel a leader should be on a project, as opposed to leading a bigger project and being more hands-off, right? And just doing the management and the scheduling and the dealing with the budgets part of the scope of work. So I think it is available to me. I guess I would need to clarify, you know, with my new sponsor, like, this is something that I would prefer to do. And if I'm going to do it, then these are the scales of projects I want to work on. However, that can become limiting too, right? So it's a balance of where I fit in on a larger project and how I would fit in on a smaller project.
So Loretta, I mean, a project architect, as I understand it, does do that over the course of their job. What else might she do? And I'm thinking specifically of, it sounds like one of the issues here is the leaders in her firm say there's no pathway, there's no connection, there's no pathway in the past for a project architect to move into the principal position. How could she go about creating that pathway for herself?
I think a lot of it comes down to perceived value, right? You have to ask yourself, why have they not created that path? I've seen various reasons. It could be cost, it could be likelihood of success, or creating a mainstream model where do most people feel the way you do, Damali, and they want to take that path? Or are you so unique in your desire that it doesn't have scale? So I think part of being able to break this down requires you to think about some of those things. I think it's great to hear that you have an active sponsor who may help you in this effort to try to determine what are those things that could get in the way. And is it really a matter of the company has simply never done this before and you're breaking into uncharted waters, which, by the way, I love if that's the situation? Or is it really a situation where there's just not any longevity because there lacks scale?
I guess you have a good point about the lack of scale, but then how would I broach that, right? Like, who do I ask? Is there a, I mean, I guess I can also ask my sponsor, maybe it has to go above him, but I guess it's more, how do you ask that question? Like, hey, is there a lack of scale? You know, like that's yeah. not that I have a problem being vocal about that. I don't have a problem asking questions, but I think it might be that's when it gets into the stepping on toes questions, right?
Well, I think the way that I would approach it is, look, if I wanted an opportunity to create a role for myself as an example, and I'm doing something new and different, it's got to start with the value statement. Right. And the value statement has to evolve around, it can't be only what's good for you. It's got to be what's good for the company.
Right.
And then the question is what are the opportunities for such a need? And that's where it becomes, where you could develop a storyline, I think, where you're closest to the customers, you're closest to the business. You would be able to identify X scenarios in which this type of career path would make a lot of sense. Right. And that's when you'll start to see for yourself, whether or not that scale opportunity is there, or your leader might be able to help you with that. But I do think that at the end of the day, it all comes down to what's good for you, what's good for the company, and then when does the business have the demand or the opportunity to present the need for people such as yourself to move into those roles. And it may very well be that at the end of the day, you'll find through this exercise that it's not a scale requirement. It may be unique to you, but at least you've gone through the due diligence. And I would imagine if you've got a good sponsor, you can have access to HR resources, et cetera, that would help formulate a frame of thinking here.
Loretta, how could Damali not only advocate for herself, but advocate for herself as a woman of color, as an asset, something that brings added value to the company?
Well, personally, I believe that diversity plays an enormous role in furthering business. It's also not just about the representation internally to the company, it's a representation externally. The customers that you're serving are diverse.
Yep.
Right?
Yes.
The customers that you are serving expect the company that they're dealing with to care equally about all of their constituents across their industry. And they expect some mirrored representation of diversity. And I think it's absolutely relevant. My personal experience in this area is that our customers, they may not always talk about it vocally. I think it's becoming more of an outwardly spoken discussion. But I can tell you over the past 20 years, they've always looked at the relevance of the cultural makeup of who they're dealing with. And whether or not they've actually put some muscle behind it, probably we would say no. But I think in today's environment, they absolutely care who they are working with, who is representing them, and that they know that you as a woman of color will represent every one of their employees as a woman of color in the appropriate way, right? It's critical for mirroring those who we serve.
You're listening to Women Amplified. That's a good question. Real people, action-based problem solving, expert advice. If you love this podcast, please rate it, review it, share it with others. We could all benefit from some really good advice and tips right now, and that's how the show grows. And if you or someone you know is thinking about a career change, please join us. Our very first virtual career fair is coming up. It's hosted by the Texas Conference for Women on October 6th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Central. You will get to connect directly with recruiters from amazing companies that have demonstrated their commitment to advancing women in the workplace. Visit txconferenceforwomen.org/careerfair. You can register for free for the October 6th Texas Conference for Women Virtual Career Fair. That's txconferenceforwomen.org/careerfair. And there will be similar hiring events at our Pennsylvania and Massachusetts conferences. The registrations will open soon, so stay tuned. Now let's get back to our conversation with Damali Lawrence and Loretta Fellers. Damali, do you feel as though you know how to advocate for yourself, not only as someone who has experience as a leader and a collaborator, but also as a woman of color?
So it's something I struggle. My sponsor and I have been, I mean, it's a great question. And I think I partially struggle with it. When my sponsor, when we started going through the whole process of leadership and talking about it, he's like, you have to recognize that you are a role model and a leader, whether you want to admit that or not. And he's like, and I know you struggle with it because I can see that you do. And I thought it was interesting because I was like, I didn't know you were paying that close of attention. But I think that in some respects, I do struggle with that. I'm very aware of who I am, right? I live in the United States. It's not like I'm not aware. I was very self-aware growing up and how I was taught. But I also think that in an industry and a society that likes to sometimes erase that, it's a fine balance. So it's something I have to work on.
Can you tell me why you think you struggle with it?
Because I think there's a neutralization that happens in corporate America of your identity, even though we're taught to, now it's about this, at least from what I've seen, like bring your whole self to work. And I don't do that. I mean, I know for me, it's a balance of how much I bring into my workspace and how much I leave out. And I know when I first started working, during 08 recession, is I brought some of myself to work and I left the rest out. And I was like, as long as I can perform and do my job, I already knew what the limitations were. And I just couldn't put those limitations on myself as I took my exams and tried to just gain the knowledge through the various companies that I've worked at. So I probably have limited my own self in that respect. And I just struggle with it. I don't know how to answer the question because it's something I struggle with. And part of it, I struggle with it because I stopped bringing everything I had to work because I feel like it's not safe. And at this company, it's a little different, but I'm still feeling it out. I've only been here 2.5 years, but in prior spaces, yeah, for me, it's a protection. It's a preserve my peace. It's a I'm competent. I have a lot to learn, but I'm competent. I can do the job. But at the same time, I am leery of corporate America. It's just, it's what it is.
Loretta, thoughts here?
Look, on some levels, Damali, I can completely relate to what you're saying. And it sounds like you're maybe still early in your career, right? I think you said in 08. So I'm a Hispanic woman. And I too have at times felt like I can't bring my whole self to work. But I will tell you, a coach gave me some advice years ago. And he asked me about my ability or my desire even to show up as my full self. And I told him, look, I'm kind of similar to you. I'm not sure that I need to. I'm here to do a job. I want to make sure that I'm credible first and foremost. And I still believe that. Number one comes credibility in the work and the results that you deliver, right? That's absolutely number one. But behind that, the fact of the matter is that we are diverse women. And there are people watching you every single day. Just like you didn't think your sponsor was watching you, guess what? There are people in the company that are also watching you that are younger in their career.
Yeah.
And they take notes on what you do, how you do it, what you stand up for, what you don't. The turning point for me over the years was, I'm going to call it a sense of confidence in the fact that I knew that I could deliver results for the company. And that was most important to me. And the fact that I could be myself became just a baseline requirement. I got to tell you that it's a lot more relaxing when you can show up every day without having hiding who you are or what you represent.
I agree with you on that. And I think, so, you know, with my sponsor and my full self with him, they talk about like, oh, you have to like find a mentor or whatever. And that just happened organically, right? And so it was easy. So I can be my full self with him. But I think now that I've transferred out of that office and I'm in a new office and I just go back into the pensive and I'm watching and I'm like, okay, it is something that I have to work on. I am aware of it. It's not something that's going to be fixed overnight. And to your point, you're right. Like, it's about my credibility and how I bring myself in. And then when do I feel comfortable enough to say, okay, I can relax. And I do understand that. But hearing it and doing it are two different things, right? Like, for me, it's something that I have to actually practice. For some people, that's easy. And I think that also goes into just like you said, like there are younger staff members who are watching and they will tell me, right? Like, and I don't have an issue with that. I think it's more like, okay, that is also an act of leadership, right? Like, how do I bring myself to work so they can know that it's okay for them to eventually do that as well, but also still obviously do their job and do it well every day. And I look at that as leadership. And I think that for me, that's why I'm like, I don't see why I have to go into this quote unquote management role to prove that. So there's so much to it. This is turning into a therapy session, but there's so much to it. And I believe just it's something that I actively work on. Like, I think I struggle with it. And even with the question on how to lead, but not go into management, it's like you said, like I have to do my due diligence and work through that. And even if it's only for myself, right? Like, let's say that I do diligence and I work through it and it still doesn't lead to necessarily a principal role, but at least I did it and know where I stand as opposed to not doing it. And then in 5 years, I'm asking myself the same question. Like, I don't want to be in the same place in 5 years, right? I barely want to be in the same place in a year, but I think it's something I need to take the notes and it's not going to happen overnight. I know that, but part of it is probably that I do need to relax a little bit. I can be very, very, what's the word? High strung.
And I think that the mantra that I live by now in my older part of my career here is to live with no regrets. I think that's what you're saying. is you do the due diligence, you go through the effort to make sure that you do everything you can to find a possible path to this principal role you want. No regrets. Whether you're talking about bringing your whole self to work, you're young in your career, you've got a lot of leverage over the course of the years, but looking back and saying, did I do everything I can to show up and to change the environment around me and to change the potential trajectory of some of those younger people that are watching you? Hopefully the answer is yes. So if you can use that as your filter as to whether or not you've done everything you can in order to drive that outcome that you want, and whatever it is you become settled in, whatever the result is, I think it goes a long way towards building results and, quite frankly, peace within.
Yeah.
As you progress in your career.
I agree with what you're saying. And I think the other part of that is, why is it, and I'm not saying that you have the answer to this or Celeste has the answer. It's just, I don't understand when you're asked, how do you want to do something? And then you respond, why is it so hard for that change to happen, right? Like, I feel if there's an open invitation, then it should be an open collaboration of getting there, not an open invitation and thanks for responding, we'll get back to you. And I'm not saying that you can answer that question, but it's something that happens everywhere, right? So it's not even just specific to me, right? I think a lot of other women can relate as well. If there's an open invitation and you respond to that invitation, and then it's just left hanging.
In other words, you had leadership at your office say, what would you like to do? Where do you see yourself in 5 years? Some version of that. And you told them, and they said, oh, we would love to make that happen to you, but we don't know how. Is that basically?
Yeah, and it's, we don't know how. And it's, I think it's a matter of, well, you should know if you're asking someone that. And the answer might be, oh, you haven't done that. And I think that they should be prepared for that, right? Like, okay, well, we have to take this further. And sometimes it does go further, right? Depending on where the person works. And sometimes it doesn't. And so I guess it's more of the, if you ask an open question and you get an answer, you have to work through the answer, right? And know that perhaps the person will not answer in the structured way that the company is structured.
Yeah. So maybe if they would have put more context around it or parameters that said, Damali, given this kind of framework of career progression, which path seems like the more likely one versus that open-ended?
Right. But I guess that makes it look like, okay, we only have two and you have to pick from one, right? Or we only have five and you pick from one of the five, which makes it look, you know, it's part of perception. And it's also working within the constructs of what a company is, right? Like if I go to Google and they say, these are our roles, then you know that, right? Or if you go to Google and they say, well, we have these roles, but you can create your own, then obviously someone is going to want to create their own, right? So you have to be open to that creation. And I think that, at least from what I've seen, and even before landing where I am right now in other companies, some companies were like, we're open, but then they shut it down. And some companies were open and it never came to fruition for the simple fact that it just couldn't come together, right? And that was me watching other people move up and figuring out what I want to do. So, yeah.
Is there any aspect of the current situation that is reflective of the COVID environment? Because I'm just thinking that a lot of companies, they're doing the best they can, but there's still headwinds that they're working against. Do you think that that has anything to do with the desire to have the conversation and to look for possible paths to get there?
That may be part of it, right? Like, obviously, a lot of companies dealt with so much, just as we as individuals dealt with so much in the past year and a half. But I think now that we're starting to see some, I guess, light at the end of the tunnel, that I need to, for myself, circle back on the conversation and say, okay, this is what started last year. Where are we going now? What's on the table? So I think that's the ownership on my part, right? Where I can say, okay, this is where I was. I know we got muddled because obviously the whole reopening and everyone's just trying to figure out what we're doing with life. So I have no problem doing that, right? Like, I'm fully on board with advocating for myself. I don't have a problem speaking up, but yes, you're right. I think the other part now is to circle back and see exactly where it is, where we are, where I am with them, and how to move forward, right? Otherwise, it's not going to go anywhere. Like, I mean, there's a million other things they're managing, which makes sense. And so, you know, that part of that is on me. But based off of what you were saying earlier on how do I do that, I think I have more clarification on how to present the argument, right? And open that argument back up, or I shouldn't say argument, conversation back up to get the clarity that I need. And so by me getting that clarity, they have clarity and we can work together to move forward and see where it goes.
You know, Damali, one of the things that I learned over years as an opera singer is that casting directors have very little imagination. Like literally their job is about imagining people in different roles, but they actually aren't very good at it. And it's backed up by neurological research that people tend to take the cognitive shortcut in that human brains naturally see patterns in things. And so when new information comes to us, we try to fit them within a pattern we already know. That's how we prevent ourselves from getting completely caught up in overthinking everything and sort of becoming immobile. And so one of the things that you learn in the performing arts is that you make it as easy as possible for that person. If it requires a leap of imagination, you do everything else possible to fit into that pattern and make it not as big of a cognitive leap. And I have never having worked in an architect's office, I don't know what that looks like, except to say that your principals may struggle to make that leap of imagination. And there may be things that you can do simply to make it easier for them.
I'm nodding my head. You can't see it, but it's a completely valid point. And I think I'm more baffled. Like, how can you not think out of this? Like, I mean, I don't understand, right? But everyone's brain functions differently, right?
Like, yeah.
If I say, okay, this is option A, and I'm like, okay, option A can have 25 different paths. Or some people will say option A has two paths. I'm like, I don't know why. You can make like, there's two, but there's derivatives of that, right? But you're right. Like, as human beings, we look for probably the pattern and the easy way out. Whereas I'm probably not that person. I don't like patterns and I don't look for them like that.
Yeah.
That's something, it's funny that you mentioned that because even in childhood, in my teachers, and they're like, she thinks a lot differently. My parents are like, yeah, pretty much. And my friends say it and they're like, your brain just functions a little bit different. I'm like, I understand patterns. It's not that I don't. I just don't see why I have to use them. And I think that's the crux of, I'm like, well, just because it was done that way doesn't mean you still have to do it that way.
Yeah, except that that's how human beings think.
I know.
I mean, you may not struggle to look to think of new things in one area, but in another area, maybe it's the way that you eat. Maybe that's the way you clean your house. Everybody has areas in which they use patterns as a shortcut.
Correct.
And yeah. It sounds like in your office, they are using a cognitive shortcut and that cognitive shortcut sort of unplugs them. They're like, wait, 1 + 1 = 2. Why are you telling me it equals 3? And there just may be ways that you can suddenly show them the math. Or make yourself look like that one.
Yes, everything in that. Yes. This really is like therapy. This is crazy. But it's very helpful.
Loretta, did you have anything to add there?
I love that. And I think you're right that especially these days with so much going on, the investment in looking at different things and trying to make something work that doesn't seem obvious is just exactly that. It's more work. So I think building the foundational level, I think, again, starting looking at the industry, trying to understand what other companies do, and using that all to create and fit within the profile of how the company's used to working may be a good path towards getting consensus and buy-in. So, but I think it's a great observation, Celeste, and I think it's very, very true. It's the path of least resistance, right?
Yeah.
And it's easier to say no than it is to say, oh, okay, you built a compelling story here, Damali. I can see where you're coming from. Wow, we didn't know that we were missing out on an opportunity or a pathway that exists in other companies that we don't have it. Wow, we may lose talent if we don't do something different. I mean, that could be a potential outcome depending on the information that you come up with, right?
Yeah, my voice teacher used to say, listen, right now, no is the easiest thing for them to say. So you have to adjust the levers and make the adjustments so that in fact, yes is the easiest. Like that's the cognitive shortcut. The shortcut is straight to, oh, yeah, absolutely. We can do that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have anything else. It was like the best way to wrap.
Okay. So yeah. You feel as though you have concrete steps that you can take. You know what to do.
Yes, I do. I mean, I'm going to obviously re-listen to this, but I was having actually a rough morning. It kind of just blew my mind. So this is good. I can go back to my desk now. I don't know how this became therapy, but ooh, I had a moment before I came on this call. And I think you just, thank you. That's what I mean to say.
That's awesome.
Loretta, anything else to add?
No, I mean, having the conversation, Damali, I can feel your energy, your spirit, your passion, and your commitment. And it's a matter of just packaging all this up in the right way to get what you want.
Yeah, no, it is packaging. This was so good. I don't know. It's only 40 minutes and I just feel like you solved my career problems. Okay. Yeah, I was nervous, but thank you.
You're going to do it.
Yeah, thank you for joining us and sharing your experience with us, Loretta. And Damali, thank you for being brave enough to bring your questions to a broader audience.
No, thank you. And I really appreciate just even the response and listening. And I hope it helps other women who listen to the podcast. And I think it's out, you know, it's just not in my industry, it's outside. And hopefully it helps someone else too. I mean,
I hope so too.
We're all talking about it, but I think we're talking about it so quietly that no one can hear. And I think the podcast actually helps people hear it. So, yeah.
Well, I'm so glad. I hope the rest of your day goes a little bit better. And Loretta, thank you again.
Thank you both. Yeah. Best of luck, Damali.
Thank you. Take care.
So we covered a lot of ground today, some incredibly important issues. I am so excited to check back with Damali in the future to see how she's making out on her path to principal. I hope you enjoyed this episode of That's a Good Question. Tune in next month. We will tackle another challenge. And if you have a problem that we can help with, please go to conferencesforwomen.org/podcast and apply to be on the show. The Conferences for Women is the largest network of women's conferences in the nation. They draw more than 55,000 women and men to annual events in Boston, Philadelphia, Austin, and California. I'm Celeste Headley, and this is Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. Thank you so much for listening. Be kind and be well.